You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The Ontario Green Energy Act, sometimes referred to as the GEA, was introduced in the Ontario Legislature in 2009. It was intended to expand renewable energy production, encourage energy conservation, and create green jobs. The GEA has been controversial outside Ontario due to its Made in Ontario clauses. These clauses demand a certain amount of Ontario labor and manufacturing input. Japan and Europe have challenged the act, and just this month the World Trade Organization reaffirmed the illegality of the Green Energy Act. Stuart True is the trade campaigner for the Council of Canadians, and he's joined us by phone to discuss this ruling. Hi, Stuart, and welcome again back to Co-op Radio and the Red Eye Show.
Well, hello, thanks very much.
What was the basis of this complaint at the World Trade Organization against the Ontario Green Energy Act, the GEA?
Well, the basis was, as you said at the top there, the local content requirements. So Japan and the European Union, objected to the fact that if a power project wanted to benefit from the high prices that the government was willing to pay for solar and wind power, that a certain portion of the components had to be made in Ontario. So, of course, a lot of German and Japanese solar and wind companies they have manufacturing in Japan or the European Union, and they didn't want to set up a factory or new production in Ontario. This wasn't the case with a lot of other companies, whether they were from Korea or the United States, who were actually setting up plants in Ontario in order to benefit from those rates. So it was really they wanted to be able to maintain their own exports, I guess, from Europe or from Japan, and still get access to those contracts, essentially. So they were just opposed to the local content rules, which are not solely used in Ontario. They're actually used in a lot of places around the world where these renewable power projects are put into place.
So can you give us some idea about the content or goals of the GEA legislation?
Mm. Well, the goal was to very quickly bring renewable power online onto the grid in Ontario. So, of course, Ontario is, like a lot of provinces, has a mix of power. I mean, it's largely based on nuclear, but there was a strong coal component for a while, and of course coal produces greenhouse gas emissions and upsets people's health in the greater Toronto area. So the idea was we need to provide incentives in order to get that power onto the grid. So let's combine job creation with renewable power generation, right? So this is, in our view, this is the definition. Actually, not just our view, in the view of the WTO, this is the definition of sustainable development, which is combining economic and environmental objectives. And without those incentives, it's very difficult to get public support for these policies. Why would you be spending 80 cents a kilowatt hour on solar, for example? Quite a high rate to be paying power providers, unless there's some spin-off benefit, and of course that benefit was jobs. And according to the government stats, it was successful. I mean, it had produced about 30,000 jobs to date before this WTO case came down, declaring the whole act illegal based on those local content rules.
So, in fact, the GEA has, to this point, been working successfully.
It sounds that way. It does sound that way, and we're hoping that the government will ignore the WTO ruling, or perhaps find a way to change the policy in such a way that they can maintain those local content rules. This is, of course, the next step in the case. So the WTO has declared the local content rules. It says it violates non-discrimination rules in the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, and it declared it an illegal trade-related investment measure, so two agreements at the WTO that this violates. The move that Ontario has to make right now is to decide, are they going to abide by the decision? They have to, under WTO rules, they have to bring the policy in line because it's been declared illegal. How they do that is another question. And so it's a matter of, I think, convincing the government that it should maintain the local content in there somehow in order to bring itself in line with the decision. Or else, if it can't do that, and if Germany and Japan aren't satisfied with the way that Ontario wants to move forward, we think that the government should ignore the decision, which is their right as well.
Ignore the decision and just continue as they're going right now.
Yeah, exactly. I think they should. I mean, the case for us is not just important for Ontario. We think this is important globally. We know that India, for example, relies on local content requirements in its renewable power projects and other projects. Other forms of government spending where countries need to be able to, especially developing countries, need to be able to insist that certain goods or certain labor is procured locally. This is just something that has been used around the world for decades in order to help develop economies. So we see there's threats already. Since the case was decided by the WTO last December, the latest decision was the appellate body, was the appeal decision that upheld that former decision. But since December, we've seen the United States file a similar challenge to India's local content rules in its renewable energy plan. We've seen China file its own case against Europe because, even though here we have Europe challenging Ontario's policy, the reality is the use of local content in solar and wind and other renewable projects is quite common in the European Union as well. So we think it's important for Ontario to basically stand up to the WTO in this case. We don't think government should have to restrain themselves. We think the use of local content is a very important tool that government should be able to use around the world. So, and for that reason, not just selfish reasons here in Ontario, we think that Ontario needs to stand up here.
Given Europe is one of the complainants in this case, do you think this kind of legislation will become more vulnerable if Canada signs the trade agreement, a new trade agreement with Europe?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the very odd or frightening parts of this ruling at the WTO, at the appeal body, I should say, decided that, it may be a bit technical, but it decided that this kind of government procurement doesn't qualify for an exemption at the WTO. So Ontario had argued in this case that, yes, we're preferring local goods, but this is actually exempt according to your own rules because you have an exemption in the GATT, in the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, for procurement, for government procurement. The WTO found that this didn't count as government procurement because the government wasn't actually procuring the panels, the solar and the wind panels in this case. It was procuring electricity. And so the conditions, the local content conditions on the solar and wind panels had nothing to do with the purchase of electricity, and therefore you can't claim this as an exempted procurement. We think that alone is going to have repercussions for other types of government spending that really should be considered procurement, should be protected from these trade rules. But I think to get to your question about the Canada-European Union free trade deal, of course, this just contains a procurement chapter, which is going to flat out ban buy local policies for provinces, for municipalities. And so, cities that used to have quite a lot of freedom in Canada to apply certain local content rules on spending are going to lose that freedom entirely under the EU trade deal. So it's really taking this logic that we see in the WTO decision and just extending it across the board in Canada and really taking that tool away from cities. And it's one of the reasons we've seen municipalities so opposed to CETA, the European trade deal in Canada, and in particular in BC, where they're asking to be exempt, where they're asking for these procurement restrictions, these trade restrictions on their spending rights, they're asking just to be completely exempt from those rules.
So do you expect that the various levels of government of Canada will join in opposing this current ruling against the GEA?
No, I wish there was that level of solidarity among provinces. I don't think we're going to see that. There's certainly provinces that feel that government shouldn't have the right to be able to spend money this way. They've given up that right already to some extent, and that's certainly the case in BC, Alberta, and Saskatchewan. I think what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to provide pressure from below on the government to do the right thing, and that's what we're hoping to do in Ontario with respect to the WTO case. There's a group of organizations, actually quite a number of organizations, that are going to be basically asking the province to stand its ground. We're going to be putting out public education campaigns to get people, to let people know exactly what's happening here, what the risks are to our local development, our sustainable development options. But across Canada, I think it's going to rely on pressure from basically pressure from the public on their governments with respect to the Canada-European Union trade agreement. And that's what we're doing this week in BC. We're on a bit of a trade tour, a six-city trade tour, to talk about these issues and why we need to be pressuring our government to not sign away these deals, to basically sign away their rights to develop sustainably and the rights of communities to decide how they want to develop.
Are there any formal penalties for you're advocating that the Ontario government simply defy the ruling that said the GEA provisions were unacceptable? Is the agreements that are at play here prescribe certain penalties for that, or is it simply a case of I don't like it, I won't do it?
Well, there are precedents for ignoring rulings. So, for example, the European Union lost a case several years ago that was brought by Canada and the United States against their bans in the EU on genetically modified crops. These are still in place in Europe. They have a precautionary principle that's ingrained in their way of thinking about rules that leads them to pass things based on the science not being secure on these issues, right, like GMOs. So they lost that. Europe lost that. And in fact, Canada and the United States were then given the permission by the WTO to put sanctions or raise tariffs or otherwise punish the European Union's exports to Canada and the United States in some way. So there is a means at the WTO for Canada to be punished if it doesn't bring itself in line with the decision. And it's amazing. It's actually completely up to the European Union and Japan how they do that. So they could go straight after something that's important for Ontario, for example, some exports. They could raise tariffs on exports that are important to Ontario that basically come from Canada. But they don't have to. They could focus on BC. They could actually take something that's important to BC and say we're going to make it more difficult to export that to the European Union up to the same value that we feel that our exports are being undermined by the Ontario policy. So that's required. That's a possibility in the WTO. It's going to be months down the road, up to 15 months before we find out exactly what the consequences are. So this is a long battle for us, I think, to convince the government that they, if they have to, they should ignore it. The consequences might not be that severe. For example, in Ontario, it might actually be worth holding on to the local content rules if that's the case. But when it comes to CETA, the European trade deal, companies are going to be able to directly challenge any buy local measures at the local level, at the municipal level or the provincial level. So they're going to be able to take a city to court, for example, if they feel the city has behaved in any way against the trade agreement, if they feel that they should have won the bid versus another company. That European company will be able to challenge that in court, have the project postponed or have the decision overturned or even get a fine, even have a fine paid out to them for the city violating the agreement. So it's going to put a chill, I think, on a lot of creative spending policies at the local level. It's going to put a chill on cities, whether they're thinking of setting up green energy like by local policies. I think it's going to deter that because they're going to be afraid of getting taken to court every time they make a spending decision. And that's going to result in basically the lowest cost bid winning all the time, which is what these agreements are hoping to achieve. So I think that's another reason why we've seen a lot of municipal governments, especially here in BC, saying no to CETA, essentially, saying they don't want to be part of that that trade agreement.
Well, it's going to be ongoing, and we'll be speaking with you again about this, I'm sure. Thanks very much, Stuart.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Stuart True. Stuart is the trade campaigner for the Council of Canadians, and you can read more about this issue at canadians.org.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@coopradio.org.